Kobodo, our stakeholders who are part of this meeting today, good morning. Let me declare this meeting officially open and welcome you in this very important meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Rural Development and Land Reform. As you are aware that we've set this day today to listen to the views or the inputs of our stakeholders with regards to ESTA Amendment Bill. But before that, can I then request Pumla to table the apologies that were received by the committee?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Good morning, colleagues. I've got an apology from the DG and from that standing apology from Mamukutana. Apology from the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. She is in Morocco attending a group. From the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Women in the Presidency. They're having a meeting. They will join us later. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair Pumla, for the apologies, although the reasons were not cited. Because the committee has taken a decision when there's an apology, the reason must be stated. Can we note? Orientation. Thank you very much. Honourable members, as I've indicated that today we'll be listening to our stakeholders, what is it that they are thinking about with regards to the amendment of ESTA. We're aware that we know that it's one of our responsibilities, that we need to ensure that everyone is involved in the legislative process. Before any bill is being passed into an act, we must make sure that there's public, intensified public engagement. On Saturday, we had a meeting in Northern Cape with the stakeholders, farming communities around Northern Cape. I think that was the last round of the provincial public hearings. So today we'll be listening to the stakeholders that have confirmed that they will be attending today and make a presentation. Tomorrow we'll be having presentations from various departments. Therefore, without a waste of time, looking at the agenda, we're supposed to get a presentation from Dr. Mbuku from the Commission for Gender Equality. Thank you very much. Over to you, Dr. Mbuku.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members of this portfolio committee. And thank you to all the stakeholders that are present with us this morning. Chairperson, let me just...
Sorry, sir.
Maybe may I request our guests to adjust the mic to be closer to the mouth also.
Oh.
We are glad to hear you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Some of us are rural. Let me begin with the mandate of CGE that is articulated in Section 97 of the Constitution. So, that the Commission for Gender Equality must promote respect for gender equality and the protection, development, and attainment of gender equality. So the CGE, in a sense, is a catalyst for the attainment of gender equality. Section 187, subsection 2, grants the CGE the powers as regulated by national legislation necessary to perform its functions, including the power to monitor, investigate, research, educate, lobby, advise, and report on issues concerning gender equality. Then I move on to just addressing some key issues which are surrounding the implementation of the Extension of Tenure Security Act as a mandate, because one has to have that as a background to looking at possible And Shepherdson, in a research report that was commissioned by the Pretoria Office of the International Labour Organization, dated February 2015, prepared by Professors Magrit Visser and Stuart Ferrer. Apart from many other factors contained in that report, government was on the one hand withdrew from the agricultural sector at the time. On the other hand, inserted itself purposefully into the sector by legislating the relationship between the producers and labor, that is farm owners and farm workers. It extended labor legislation to farm workers who were previously not protected by either the Basic Conditions of Employment Act or the Labor Relations Act. Second, in 2003, a sectoral determination for agriculture was promulgated to set a minimum wage for the sector. And thirdly, the Extension of Security and Tenure Act, effected in 1997, aimed to provide more security of tenure to farm workers living on farms. What is notable, though, is the lack of reciprocity on the part of farm owners, most of whom are white, from the very beginning. Instead of reciprocating the goodwill of government, white farmers engaged, and still do to this day, the best labor experts to advise them on how to circumvent every legislation or measures government introduces. They restructured the labor force, and these processes included processes like casualization, that is, making employees who were previously permanent casual employees. Processes of externalization, that is, introducing a labor broker to act as a go-between the farm owner and the farm workers, so that there is no employer-employee relationship, thus making nonsense of any protections that might be extended by legislation in that particular relationship. And also using migrant workers who are very vulnerable and also non-unionized was another measure adopted by farm owners so that they could also pay them, you know, low wages. Substitution of relatively more skilled workers for relatively less skilled workers. And less skilled and less productive workers end up losing their jobs and find it difficult to find employment elsewhere. Measures such as changing labor management techniques, for example, a change from payment based on time worked to productivity-based remuneration. CGE comes across individual cases of violation of farm worker rights and farm dweller rights, and because it is not an implementing entity, it tends to attend to these individual cases. I've also, as a personally, had the experienced chairperson and member, honorable members, of acting in the Land Claims Court where matters of ESTA come before that court. And more often than not, because, in fact, that court has a right or an automatic right of review in respect of all cases, you know, under ESTA. And more often than not, procedures are just not followed. However, in the field, there is a widespread violation of farm worker, farm dollar rights. While the law makes it peremptory that before an eviction is effected under ESTA or the Labour Tenancy Act, the Land Claims Court has an automatic review in respect of all eviction orders made by magistrates. The problem is that in some cases, evictions are effected outside the law, or without regard to the dictates of the law. Large numbers of farm workers and farm dwellers are evicted unprocedurally and do not know their rights and do not have the means to access justice to vindicate their rights. And cases that come before the Land Claims Court are not necessarily gender disaggregated. And in this regard, Chairperson and Honourable Members, it is noteworthy to mention that this year, in August, the acting judge president of the Land Claims Court adopted a practice note number 19. There is a copy of this practice note, which is like the rules of the court. That basically is speaking to the importance of judges as well as legal practitioners in that court to apply their minds when they are making judgments as to how those judgments impact women and the girl child in particular. This was formulated by the CGE with a view to force both legal practitioners as well as judges in that court to have an eye for matters of gender from the way the cases are introduced up to the point they are finalized. The judgments must reflect an application of the mind as to how women and the girl child will be impacted by the judgment. And having made this, reached this milestone of that court adopting this practice note as part of its rules of court, we hope to take this to the Chief Justice so that from the Constitutional Court to all the other courts, including Magistrates' Courts, gender would be mainstream. That is still work that we're hoping to do in the near future. So there is an advocate, Chairperson, honorable members, of a shift from a legislative protection to empowerment through land ownership. Clearly from 1996, when our constitution was adopted, government set on a path of introducing one piece of legislation after another. Instead of those efforts being reciprocated, farm owners found ways of undermining those efforts, precisely because attitudes have not changed. There can be no guarantee that any further legislation closing the gaps in the previous legislative measures is going to yield any results different from the past. It would seem that rather than the focus being on introducing legislation aimed at protecting the vulnerable farm workers, farm dwellers, focus should now shift to empowering and converting farm workers, farm dwellers, into farm owners themselves in their own right. The Agri-Dweller case study and a full presentation, Chairperson, is also one of the annexures that will be distributed to members, to honorable members, is a case in point, and it will be circulated. It demonstrates beyond any reasonable doubt that it is possible for people who are farm workers or farm dwellers to become farm owners with state assistance and a mentor to guide them in the use of the land productively, profitably, and sustainably. In fact, the facts in Agri-Dweller prove two critical things that I want to speak to. Firstly, is the use of commodities for previously disadvantaged people that can be a powerful lever to catapult them to prosperity, which has been an exclusive privilege of a few white families since the 1800s when commodities were introduced. Chairperson, as one of the annexures, there is a document here that is also one of the annexures called Municipal Commonage. That has got a history of commodities in this country dating back to the 1800s and has been a source of wealth and prosperity for those who accessed that, those pieces of land attached to every town and every municipality in the country. In the case of Agri-Dweller, their success story began when they were helped to lease a commonage of the town of Napier, land of about 640 hectares in 2006. And in 2015, they did the magnanimous act of making available to another group called Amakawa approximately 295 hectares of land and have been mentoring them just as they themselves were mentored by Kosi Fansay, their benefactor. In the interim, for over 10 years, they, as the original group, have acquired two farms, that is the Agri-Dweller group, have acquired two farms, the first of which, to the credit of the Department for Rural Development and Land Reform, they were assisted by the department to purchase the farm called Jabda's Crans. The group were further assisted by Pioneer Foods, who gave them $8 million to buy their second farm. Today, the people who were miserable, destitute, hopeless, without a future, own two farms, 100%, and their production in wheat, rye, oats, canola, and lupins is increasing from year to year. They report an increase. For example, Kosi was saying that this year's harvest is 20% higher than last year's. The second thing to learn is that ownership of land is true empowerment. As farm owners, no one may throw their weight around them. They are their own bosses now. What has happened in Agdala can happen on a large scale if one, an audit is made by the Department of all communities' lands in the country, which goes beyond the 284 municipalities, because communities' land is state land that was made available for public use to most towns in South Africa. This is how a small town like Napier ended up with a communage, which is 640 hectares in extent. Most of the communage land is used by white families, leased to them over long periods of time. The fact of these long leases is now being used as an argument against accessing them or making them available to poor land reform beneficiaries or farm workers and farm dwellers who are landless. And Honorable Chair, no one is asking the uncomfortable question as to the validity of these lease contracts or agreements which were entered into under the apartheid dispensation, which was itself racially discriminatory. No one is asking as to how such contracts created in the crucible of apartheid can be said to be consistent with a constitutional democracy. No one is daring to ask as to how can it be fair to exclude or deny a majority of poor people from enjoying the rights which have been enjoyed over long periods of time and favor a few who have already benefited handsomely from the system of apartheid discrimination. After being 2 years since the dawn of democracy, no one is daring to ask why large tracts of land are leased by municipalities to elite groups to run golf clubs and pay minimal rentals year after year, yet there are large numbers of people without land and houses. Some of them, as we've seen recently, like Johann Rupert, even deny the value of the land because the high value of the land will result in higher rentals that they have to pay or for rates and taxes that they have to pay. No one is daring to ask when will these contracts be nullified and release large tracts of land to be utilized by large numbers of people who can generate wealth from it, just the way Agdala Group have done, to a point of owning their own farms. Then, Chairperson, for the sake of time, coming to a few recommendations to close it. There must be a shift from bringing up more protective legislation for farm workers and farm dwellers, but rather more focus on enabling legislation for fast-tracked land acquisition for farm workers and farm dwellers, as well as, all the landless in the land, of course. Secondly, there must be an audit of all community land since the 1800s, which marks the establishment of communities, when white towns, mainly in the old Cape Province, were formally established. It was during this time that cities and small towns received surrounding land for free from the state. Such land was transferred in ownership to municipalities, subject to certain conditions which are well articulated in the documentation. Thirdly, the audit among other things must disclose the full dimensions of the land in question, its size, location, its boundaries, to whom it is leased, when the lease was entered into, and with whom. The department must be seen to enforce the law that provides that municipal communities be made available to poor people for agricultural purposes. The law also provides that the state can fund infrastructure on communities' land. 5, going forward, municipalities must be an open book on information and transparency on municipal community land. Who is using the community land and what is being paid? What are the conditions attached to the lease? When it was entered into and until when it is meant to run? And no lease should be more than 5 years, so that the land is used on a rotational basis and as many people get the chance to use the land in a lifetime. 7, if necessary, new legislation must be made to existing communities, acquire new communities, and even reclassify other municipal-owned land as municipal community land. And 8, ensure that where community is used for farming purposes, water and other infrastructure is provided to make it viable. And communities must continue to be used for agricultural purposes, not for residential settlement or any other purposes. And 10, on land allocation to poor people who are willing to work the land, this must be put on fast track. And use be made of the new law on expropriation and the 50-50 policy as part of land reform in the public interest. A national revolving fund be established to enable those who want to embark on farming with land to buy the wherewithal to make them effective and productive farmers, after the example of 1 acre fund, which was started in Kenya 10 years ago, 2006. Now in more than 7 countries in the Congo, Burundi, Rwanda, Tanzania, Uganda, and Malawi, with more than 300,000 farmers in 2015 being supported by this fund, aiming to have 1 million farmers on their books by the year 2020, lifting no less than 5 million people out of grinding abject poverty in the process. And a land acquisition fund with substantial funds must be established alongside a revolving loan fund, the former being used for acquiring land for the landless and the latter for assisting with operational requirements, again, as 1 acre fund is doing, with great success. With respect, the 100 million budgeted for one household, 1 hectare, announced by the minister, is a pittance if regard is had to land acquisition as well, because land acquisition alone will take up all of that money within no time. Land acquisition as a strategy and a policy will give effect to Section 25, Subsection 6 in the Constitution. Ownership is the most secure form of tenure. It operates against the whole world. Large numbers of people now living in sheds, through the length and breadth of the land, would have the means to build their own homes on the land they own. It is only when the country is on this trajectory of people owning their own land and accessing other land for productive purposes, such as communities, that we will boast not by the number of people who are receiving social grants, but by the number of people we have weaned from dependence to economic independence. Needless to say, all these processes, whether it be accessing community land or allocation of land for ownership, must be gender sensitive and place women and the girl child at the center, not the periphery, in keeping with the equality clause in Section 9, Subsection 3 of the Constitution, the equality clause. Thank you, Chairperson. That's our submission.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mgoku. Members who have been listening to the presentation, before we talk to the presentation, let me take this opportunity to welcome the WIP, Honorable Mgoku and Honorable Annette Steyn. I'm told that other two members of the DA will request that they perform to introduce themselves. You're welcome in this meeting.
Chairperson, thank you. Before they introduce themselves, I just want to say that they have not been allocated this Not in allocated portfolios, but they are under training with me, so they will just be following me for the next few days, but they are welcome to introduce themselves.
Morning everyone, my name is Chantal King from the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, Thandeka Mbabama from East London, Eastern Cape.
Good morning everybody, my name is Ross Burden, also from the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, Chaplain. I'm Bulelo Baha from Pretoria, Gauteng.
Thank you very much for welcoming this Portfolio Committee on Rural Development in Limpopo. Members, can we talk to the presentation? Comment if there are questions. Ask questions based on the presentation made by Dr. Mkoko. Honorable Sultana. Honorable Mandela.
Thank you, Chaplain. Thank you, Dr. Mkoko, for your enlightening presentation. I'm particularly impressed by the fact that somehow, thinking by our conversation and my own, I seem to hit one note in so far as saying that we need to look no further for land as a way of resolving the situation that we face with as a country. Indeed, ownership is the most appropriate way of empowering people. I feel that you're spot on when you say people should rather be accorded land rather than circumventing our case around the real problem and trying to ameliorate the conditions under which people should still be evicted. I support that kind of thinking. That's my best comment on this. At an appropriate time, I will deliberate on where I think we should get this land from. We haven't had time to look thoroughly at the practice note, but I appreciate the fact that you went so far as to bring in as part of your presentation what is contained in the practice note. Indeed, as we're going around, we found that literally countrywide, farm owners and farm dwellers are getting the rough end of the stick. And we need a more pragmatic and practical way of solving the problem rather than playing around with it for another 10 years or so. It's just not helpful. So I appreciate the fact that we can have institutions like yours come head on, tackling the problem head on. You have our support in that space. About the communities, one municipality came out. This is just by way of commenting on the fact that you spent so much time on communities. One municipality in Ngeni and Howick, KZN, said that they have run out of land. They are sitting with 20,000 people who come from the farms already, and they do not know where to resettle these people. So it may not necessarily be the solution. I know in a city like Mthatha, for instance, which is surrounded by land claims, municipality is battling to do any economic development just because the land is surrounded by is battling rather with land claims. So we need to find a way of solving this. But on the question of the leases, you're suggesting 5 years. My take is that in a space of 5 years, you'll be able to develop a profitable business, because you're leaning more towards making agricultural land available, or rather land available for agricultural production. Think of the people who have got this 8 million rand. If it was not a grant, they would be able to pay back within that short space of time. I would urge your institution to rather think about a longer period of lease, normally in development, you look at something like 35 years going beyond. I appreciate the note, the sentiment you have expressed that open-ended leases are not helpful. It is a form of granting that person their total ownership, basically. But I've got a problem with just a period of 5 years. You can hardly do much. Whether a loan, which is beyond your control, can have a negative impact. I think I would want to end there, Chairperson, and I appreciate the opportunity of granting us.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sultana. Honorable Madela, then. Honorable Amethyst.
Thank you very much, Chair. I also wish to express appreciation and welcome the great presentation by thank you very much. I want to find comments on the point that last point made by Honorable Otamia. The idea of a 5-year lease have its challenges. I understand the principle of giving more people access to the land, and that principle is indeed supported. But from a practical point of view, the point made by Honorable Otami indeed is as merit. I'm aware of a group of people who are leasing land from public works, 16 acres, hectares in Rafir, Sommer, and in the community. They're actually struggling to access finances from commercial banks because their lease agreement is for 3 years. And the banks are saying, no, it's way, way too short. We cannot give you money in, like, assist you to invest, to make your land much more productive. So that is a challenge which I imagine would actually also be only 5 years. So indeed a longer term is good, but importantly, where land are not being utilized for that purposes, then I think those kind of leases have to be reviewed. I think, Chair, the whole issue of municipal commons is something that we certainly as a committee must explore, of course, in the consultation with partners of the COPPA, Portfolio Committee of Legal and Municipalities. Because there's one thing that Commissioner did not touch on. In the transition from apartheid to democracy, there's large pieces of land that was privatized, it was owned by government, by municipalities, that indeed became private, given to people for private use at absolutely minimal costs. So I think those are some of the things that one certainly hope we could be able to explore. The research that Commissioner is referring to, that research was approved multiple technically again. I think as a committee, we already resolved that the Kenyan approach is something that we must explore. And we hope to indeed have that study to carry out very soon. So Commissioner, the one challenge that we encountered throughout all our public hearings is the point that you raised right at the end of your presentation, and the whole issue of having a gender lens when you look at accessing land, etc. We found that in most cases, in the norm care, there was a woman who used to live on the farm, was evicted because she wanted to improve her house where she was living on the farm. In turn, despite the fact that she was sent 5 kilometers away from the farm where she used to reside, in her employment as a maid, because she was working in the kitchen of the farm, the farmer, you know, that continued. She had to walk 5 kilometers every day to to a job. The point I'm trying to make, one would want to see that the Commission of Gender Equality do not so much an investigation, but address, do something to address the gender relations in this whole process. I think for us, we do not have a sense, we do know generally that women are heads of households, and they are the ones when their spouses die, they are the first ones to be evicted. You know, we would want to see this commission zooming in much more on that, coming out, perhaps making strong recommendations for Parliament to enforce in protecting the rights of women. Indeed, this bill that we are, that is before Parliament now, is one attempt to address that particular loophole. And indeed, the Constitutional Court also now recently did make a finding that indicates clearly that if the husband dies, it cannot just willingly evict the woman, the spouse from the farm. So this is a very important issue.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I also have to just apologize for the new members. I will be in and out today because I still get the paperwork done and so on. Chairperson, unfortunately I didn't attend the whole presentation, but I read through it. I also want to start with the thing of the lease period. One of the issues I think that is a challenge is that certain commodities, the lease of 5 years might be too short. That we have to look at something that is a longer term lease period, but you know, we don't have any power over municipalities, and I don't know if it's a good thing to put it in legislation, but at least something that could be driven by the portfolio. And I think the same for the land reform program. Lease periods play a role. If you have a certain commodity that needs a lot of infrastructure or a lot of input or cash at that time, banks won't give you a loan for a short lease period. So I think that is important. Chairperson, something that I've been thinking of for a long time is that I think commonages must form part of the land reform program as a whole. Because commonages, I think, is a good, if you want to call it a training school or something where people that want to start. Before we start giving land all over in a land reform program to people that come and go, because many people want to farm, but once they're on the farm, they actually understand the challenges and what it's all about. So I think we have to re-look the whole land reform strategy and make communities part of the land reform program. So that community is almost like the first step, or if you just have two cattle and something that you start off with, the ideal place to start is the commonage. From there you can work on your skills and get training and whatever, and then after that beneficiaries from the commonage then get moved to land and farm. But for that to happen, Chair, I think it's very important that something like the extension officers are used much more extensively. I know in the area that I come from, the commonages are usually just almost a dumping ground. It's either people have long-term rent on a commonage and that doesn't really add to your land reform program. It's usually people with lots of experience who get a long-term rent agreement with a commonage and it doesn't add to your land reform program, or it's almost a dumping ground. People just go on there and there's a lot of cattle and animals and things walking around, and that's also usually where, you know, animals get onto the roads and get involved in accidents and whatever. But the program is just form part with the municipality, the agriculture, with the extension officers, and rural development and land reform that needs to sit down and decide how community management needs to fit into the total land reform program. Because if we don't do that, Chairperson, you know, we're also going to have always problems with communities. And when we manage communities well, it would be a good idea to then extend your communities so that it becomes part of your land reform program, that first time or in three people basically start at your community if you don't have experience or a lot of experience
Don't
worry, I know that. We are in coalition, because we are on a colliding path, Jefferson, and so that is my little bit. Yeah, I really think we need to make Common Interests a part of the land reform program, and ensure that either land reform and agriculture then play the role, so that we identify beneficiaries from there to move on. And then just lastly on farm workers share. Not all farm workers actually want to own land or want to be farmers. I think what is important is that they need security. They must either have land where they live or land where they work or something like security. What I've seen in other places is that many of the farm workers now get houses in town where it is practical. This thing of walking 5 kilometers is not practical. But in certain areas where people get land in farms, one of the reasons why I'm saying that, Chair, and you will remember when we started with the whole EFSA thing, when we close farm schools, it's not always practicable for farm workers to stay on farms anymore, because where do your children go to school? If you can't send your children to school, if you can't access something like a clinic, it's difficult if you live on a farm. And I know, I live on a farm. It's not always practical. So we need to also look at sometimes getting farm workers to live in town, so that the children can go to school, so that they can access clinics and all kinds of other things, but then there must be a system where they can't live in town. How do they get in and out from town to work? If you need the farm workers then to live on farms, how do you get the children from the farm to school? Because we've stopped in many cases the facility for children to get to school. And not all schools have boarding schools. So I know that many of the children get out of school because they can't put their children in the town. Thank you, Chair. Long story.
Thank you, Anna Mustin. Any other member wants to comment or ask a question? Mm-hmm. Sorry, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Before I give Dr. Mbuku an opportunity to just comment or respond on some of the issues raised, I just want to check, as members have indicated, that most of the issues raised on the presentation are correct. But in most cases, people from the farms, they need land for residential purpose. Because Common Interest focuses on land for agricultural purpose, which is the opposite. Why they need to farm, but they need land for residential purpose. Have you ever engaged a department such as rural development, agriculture, and labor on this research findings as presented today? Because I think they are very much important. The relevant departments need to be aware of this research finding. Then the other one is you mentioned something about the audit of the community. Just to check with the commission whether they've just seen the first report on the land audit. So, do you mean that a specific audit must be made on Commonage only? Not maybe that one belongs to the Commonage issue. Can you just comment on the issues also raised by Honourable? But I mostly agree with some of the findings of the research.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, there's a sense in which I think the main kind of issue raised that I would imagine would require responses is the question of the length of the lease. I must say that not being an expert on agriculture, I really wouldn't want to talk elsewhere on whether it should be 5 years. So surely, it was in a sense also my own personal criticism Abu Dhala experiment, where they have been leasing that communist land for effectively 10 years now. Well, in the ninth year, last year, they divided it for the benefit of the other group of people who have been outsiders. And they are now mentoring that group, which is admirable. But Olsen was saying that to give more people access, you know, a rotational system may be beneficial. But there are practical considerations like certain crops and all of that, you know, may require, and also funding, you know, may require, you know, a longer period. Really wouldn't, not married, to, you know, I wouldn't be the one to have the final say in the matter. Chairperson, I think the people on farms who need land for residential purposes, that would be, you know, answered by an acquisition of land, as we are proposing. With that acquisition of land, people can decide what to use it for. Some of it may be used for residential purposes. For example, the 1 hectare, one household, I take that part of it will be used for putting up a house and part for producing some crops. So it is really the land acquisition, I mean, the focus on that we sort of kind of advocating. The contact with the department is, must say, it's been a bit erratic. I want to hope there would be more structured, you know, interaction in these matters. insofar as, for example, the Commission took up from 2012 already the campaign, One Woman, One Hectare, very little sort of effort made, I mean, to engage, very little effort to actually engage. And that eventuated, of course, in the admirably for the department in the adoption of the program, One Household, One Hectare. And as the Commission for Gender Equality, we would simply want to make sure that even that One Household, One Hectare is not going to end up marginalizing, you know, women, and again, you know, benefiting men, as it has been in the past. Now, the research, I mean, shows that the land reform program over a period of 10 years, which is CGD did research over the period of 2010, and found that only about 13% of the beneficiaries were women, and the balance were men. So from a monitoring point of view, certainly wouldn't want a repetition of that, you know, going forward. The land audit, Chairperson, I must confess, I haven't myself had sight of the report on the land audit. I'm not sure what it entails. The advocacy on this, on the audit on communities, again, is predicated upon the success we see in the Agribala, you know, case study, where this benefactor managed to persuade the municipality to make the commonage available to this group of people who have been destitute. And as the Honorable Member, Madam Steyn, said, they use it as a stepping stone in their agricultural production. And they manage to generate income from that to a point where onlookers like the Department of Rural Development saw that these people were making a success of using the commonage itself and helped them to acquire their own farm. And pioneer foods also came on board and help them to buy the second farm. So it can really be a good training ground indeed for people who want to be engaged. I couldn't agree, you know, more on that particular point. It's a very important point. the other points were more really in agreement on what we have been discussing. And if there is perhaps anything that I'm going to be leaving out, please remind me. It is true that women suffer when it comes to evictions. And precisely that, again, that would is the lender position. I would even say that, even in Fiji, we come across cases where there is a preponderance of these violations of human rights and gender rights. And one would say that we've even been saying that there should actually be even naming and shaming, kind of campaign on the part of those farmers who are known to be, notorious in committing human rights violations and violations of gender rights. And so that those specific farms could even be the first in line when it comes to expropriation. Because if that land is used to abuse people, then it's proper that in the public interest, the state should take that land and make it available for beneficial purposes to other persons. So we continue to, and also make the point that when it comes to actually, because the Commission for Gender Equality is not like a government department that does, some of this, where our role is really monitoring and investigating where matters are taking place, but not one of actually implementing, certain actions. We report those matters to Parliament, so the Parliament would be able to call a relevant government department or state organ that has to do with that particular matter to take it and run with it. Chairperson, let me pause there, and perhaps I can be reminded of anything that I might have omitted. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. I think mostly were just comments from members. Thank you very much, Dr. Mkosin. Members, taking to the second presentation by Association for Rural Advancement, which is AFRA. Thank you very much. Over to AFRA.
Chairperson, and thank you to the committee. The Association for Rural Advancement, otherwise known as AFRA, thanks you for this opportunity for us to make verbal submissions to further our written submission, which was made in December of last year, on the amendments proposed to the ESCA. As you know, or as you might know, AFRA is an organization which was established in 1979, in direct response to the post-evictions which were then taking place in South Africa. It was started to assist rural communities in the struggle against those forced removals, and it has continued to work in one way or another with rural communities, particularly farm dwellers in KwaZulu-Natal since that time. As we welcome these parliamentary hearings by the Portfolio Committee, we also take note of the attempt to broaden public consultation which the Portfolio Committee has undertaken over the last year or so. We believe that despite the limitations of those hearings,
the Portfolio Committee has been able to see and hear the voices of farm dwellers and people on farms. We know that they have seen the dignity, their dignity, and observed the respect they hold this committee and the institution of democracy it represents. But we know that you have been, when you have been to our people, you have seen their anger and frustration, and we have hope, and we hope that you have heard the voices of the people. The demands of our people are at the end of the day very simple. And although this particular process is limited in its technical scope, no one can speak about security of tenure without having to address the reality of the conflicts of insecurity, vulnerability, and historic injustice our people have suffered and continue to endure. No one can furthermore turn a blind eye to the culprit in the eyes of the people who has failed them. And, by the way, this Parliament. It would surprise you to hear that the chief culprit, which should be recalcitrant and untransformed powers in the form of landowners, who, by the way, remain largely white, those should be the chief culprits of our people. However, and it will surprise you, many of the challenges and frustrations that are experienced on a daily basis are unfortunately directed at the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. With such a grand title and so many highly wanted programs and policies, if we confine ourselves to these haloed walls and even more august surroundings of the department's head office in Pretoria, we would believe that farm dwellers and the rural people are merely ill-informed or otherwise ignorant of the great work undertaken by the department. This is not the case. As always, our people are correct, and the bureaucrats tasked with protecting and advancing their rights, such as those contained in ESPA, are wrong. We must confront the reality that the failure of rural transformation and agrarian reform, amongst others, which is the plight of labor tenants, we have forgotten citizens, not only of land reform, but also of South Africa as a whole, and they remain injuriously neglected after 20 years. In view of these concerns that we have and the voices of people from whom you have heard, we must ask the committee how it envisages proceeding with these amendments in light of, one, the need for greater and more, we believe, extensive local consultation with farm dwellers themselves, and two, the expected recommendations of the high-level panel, which is now ongoing as a process in itself. We believe that farm dwellers and people on farms would be greatly heartened if further and deepened consultations were held more closer to them, to where they live and where they work. We know from our experience and your experience in the province of KwaZulu-Natal that there were some great difficulties expressed by farm dwellers when the hearings were scheduled to be held in Amajuba district, Newcastle. We know and we appreciate your efforts when you came to Howick with the assistance of the local government there and all the structures of our people. But still, it was held at night, and the limited consultation and the limited opportunity for people to hear or be given an opportunity to be heard, these things concern us, and we believe that it is necessary for greater consultation to be held at local level with people, especially farm dwellers and workers. But further to that, we believe that the South African public would be greatly assisted in understanding how these processes of the amendments will relate to the findings and recommendations of the high-level panel. Seeking this clarity, if it pleases the members of the committee, would be of importance to progressive civil society and all stakeholders. The submission we make here today before you followed, as I said, the written submission made in December of 2015, which we are sure the members of the committee have been available copies of. It is also
not being made in isolation, but enjoying itself views put forward by other progressive NGOs and civil society formulations such as the Legal Resources Center and PLAS Institute at the University of the Western Cape.
I'm trying all the time to locate the document from whose presenter is living there.
Can't find it, and the screen is not helpful.
Just
speaking to it. For that very reason that we are making this oral submission, not to repeat what is contained in the written submission, only to strengthen certain key points that you've made as a committee. We want to just very quickly remind ourselves that in 2005, AFRI convened a national conference of farm dwellers from across South Africa. One of the key questions which was being discussed by these farm dwellers and farm workers, as a matter of fact, was how they viewed themselves, not in legal terms, but how they actually viewed themselves. And I would like, this is not contained in the submission, but I would like to share it with the members of the committee. The following was said and finally agreed on. Farm dwellers are people who reside on the farm. Their parents were born there. They worked there. And they were the indigenous people on the land before the farms were created. I'm going to read that again. Farm dwellers are people who reside on the farm. Their parents were born there. They worked there, and they were the indigenous people on the land before the farms were created. In seeking somehow to translate this, we are not a legal organization, but in seeking to translate this into the law, we believe that the legislation needs to give effect to the spirit of that formulation. We can go further, yeah, and say that when we ask people to define who is family, we find definitions that do not have a current expression in the legislation. They are much wider in scope, but more consistent with the reality of our people. We think that incorporating these ideas would assist the legislation in reflecting people's realities much better. For this reason, I think AFRA strongly recommends, as we state in our submission, that the Portfolio Committee hold a national consultative workshop with farm dwellers so that these proposals, which have been developed by farm dwellers, are shared and directly input from them to the committee into the legislation as the most effective and important way forward for us. We wish to reiterate the alternatives and outcomes. Before we get to alternatives, we'd like to just point out and highlight our concerns regarding the various points contained in the bill, and in particular draw your attention to the Land Rights Management Board and the Land Rights Management Committee. I think our concerns, in short, speak to institutional concerns about other existing structures that exist. But I think also, more importantly, we want to highlight the question of the relationship between the budget allocation department and these institutions.
and creating multiple institutions with potentially overlapping mandates. It seems as if these new institutions join Visage could very well take over existing responsibilities from the department, and it's unclear what the impact of that would be. I think we want to reiterate the alternatives that have been put forward for some time. The need for there to be an assessment of the reasons of the failure of ESCA. We need to look at protective measures that govern evictions, but also Section 4 that compels the minister to make available funds to enable farm occupiers to acquire secure and independent long-term tenure rights, either on-farm or off-farm. And we need to ensure that the justice system becomes more responsive to the needs of ESCA occupiers, and we need to ensure that the distinction between labor and tenure rights are upheld. We think that a stronger relationship between the department and the CCMA on this issue would be beneficial. We believe that provisions for the establishment and monitoring and evaluation system of ESTA, and that this needs to be linked for the alternative dispute resolution systems to intervene in threatened evictions proactively, and so on. I think in short, we would like the amendment process to be part of the overall process of reviewing the legislation governing lands reform and the various rights contained in the Constitution. I think our concern is that these amendments will not sufficiently address the realities of our people. A consultative process which is effective needs to occur for legislation and institutional alignment to occur effectively. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, President. Honourable members, can we just talk to the presentation? We are proposing a consultative question. Are you saying that the committee must have it before the bill is being passed into an act, or after, or at any given time? Then again, you said the public involvement or the public participation process by the committee was not enough. Should be done at the local level. Do you mean that in each and every municipality we need to have the public engagement on this amendment? According to your own view, is it possible, looking at the number of the municipalities that we have? Then you touch on the failure of ESTA. Can you please unpack that, and also the issue of the definition of the family that it involves current, but also looking at the amendment that has been presented, what is your proposal? What is it that you are proposing? Honourable members? Honourable Sultan?
Thank you, sir. What looks like page 3 of the presentation, sentence starting with the words, the reality on the ground. Now, you give a figure of only 1% representing what you regard as legal evictions. Now my question is, this a figure, a parallel set and confirmed figure, and does it apply to the whole of South Africa? And also, earlier, you gave a figure of 450,000 people in the very first base in rural Natal. At a given point in time.
barely fair. That is also definitely a research figure. And in the next paragraph below, where that one on page 3, say the ESSA amendment bill does not contribute towards rectifying these problems. Can you explain yourself, you know, on that? Because when the department drafted and presented this bill to us, they definitely indicated to us that the amendments were intended to address these issues, but to make a bold statement to say that the bill does not contribute. In other words, you're nullifying just about everything in this respect that's contained in the proposed amendments. Can you expatiate on that? Thank you.
Honorable Matthias, thank you. Welcome. Let me take the seat and followed by Honorable Mbuni.
Those who have brought these charges against him have realized that the prospects of a successful conviction is not, or is not, they are now invoking this legislation, prevention of legal eviction from an unlawful occupation of land. And they're trying to hide their nostalgia with the apartheid legislation. They want to act like they are smart by distancing or gradually moving away from the act which they invoked in order to have these charges to stick. Now they realize that by invoking of that act brings back the memory of the past. Now they want to walk away from that and invoke a new legislation which they claim should be the one that must be used to charge the commander-in-chief. Now, a comparative analysis of these various legislations enacted before 1994 and those that have been passed after 1994, the consistency and lack of consistency thereof in protecting and providing security of care of those who are most vulnerable on the countryside, on the various parts. So that when we undertake this legislative review is not a knee-jerk reaction to a specific legislation, but responds to the totality of the legislative regime, as it were. I think for now, these are just two questions and comments which I want to make. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair, thank you very much, and thanks to the presentation. The gentleman is Mr. Glenn Farrell. He's very much well known to other people around and outside, and I think they know me. They can then approach him to get an idea who's preaching. Honestly, you know him quite well, and I know him quite well. I'm not surprised. I'm really touched to see him coming to Parliament to represent the people on behalf of his institution. He has a main truth to what I've known him to be in the dark days of apartheid. Thank you. Ron, great chair, if you notice on the head. I've known him since he was youth.
Chair.
I think pertaining to the submission, I did, of course, chair, forward my apology for submitting my office. The context that they draw, to a large extent, I can associate with, although I pick up some contradiction. The context, there's a point he was making, I don't know if it was a direct quote from the return submission or it was the talking to, where he says, if you sit in the air-conditioned committee rooms in the government offices in Pretoria and everywhere, you would think that all is very well. But if you go out there to the plus minus 2.8 million people, you begin to get the truth. We've been to every province, and to a great extent, what Mr. Farrett has shared holds merit to me from what I've seen and heard. And I was privileged to talk to Power FM this morning at something busting. And I think I shared pretty much the same in terms of the picture. So I would think that lastly, on the context and some of the bureaucratic reports where we got the impression that all is well, I think that we need to take that point and take it quite firmly, lest we sacrifice the 2.8 million people at the altar of bureaucratic correctness and the all is well. So the context, Chair, I do emphasize. I would, however, as Mr. Farrell would know, have certain issues of engagement. The first one is the Amatuba and the Howick cases he referred to. At Amatuba, every attempt may be made, I would stand chair in committee's defense that the committee had done its best. Or what in legal terms they call what a reasonable person or body could have done. Clearly, at Amatuba, the internal contradictions on the ground, people not wanting the other to, clearly is beyond the committee's power to could have done anything.
I'll leave it at that and go to Howick, where the hearing was held at night. In Howick, in the Northern Cape, in Port Elizabeth, in the Eastern Cape, in the Western Cape, the hearings were held during the weekends. So, and in a number of then other cases, I would say 70% or more, the hearings were held at night. I guess that it could be tested. I would again stand in committee's defense chair strongly and say, farm workers are held at work during the day, and clearly with the attitude of the farm bosses, it would be very difficult to secure workers during the day. And therefore commend the committee for going on weekends in certain cases, Western Cape, Northern Cape, PE, and I don't know which other cases, and commend the committee for what I estimate to be 70% cases where committee went at night, because we would then have to see this farm boss who would say people cannot even hold a meeting at night. Chair, I do need to hasten and say, at some instances I do know, I think the WhatsApp group will see when the committee was still talking at 1 a.m. on the road coming from here. I don't think that the committee would have ordinarily done that unless if this committee was going an extra mile to make sure that it hears the voice of the people. It was somewhere between Limpopo and Northwest, towards Tabaslimbi, driving back to the hotel at 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. So I'm saying, Chair, perhaps I'm persuading the organization of Mr. Glenn Perez to look at the night hearing differently. So much submissions from our people, and he was there in Howick. I saw him in person. Remember, I said I confessed to knowing him closely. He was there in person at Howick. He saw how packed the halls were. I would argue, Chair, in case this issue become legal at some point, I would argue that this was the best we could have done to hold the hearings at night. Because EFSA is targeting itself to a certain constituency. I don't think it's a general law. I think it's targeting itself to security in farm dwelling situations. So, Chair, I was just wanting to interact with the organization in Accra, based on the Amajuba experience they fight in the Howick. Let me talk on Amajuba just one last more time, Chair. You see, out of 80 public hearings that you may attend, again, I stand to be tested in a court of law. If 60 out of 80 are successful, I don't, it's like elections, by the way. Whenever across the world elections are pronounced free and fair, there would have been some minor skirmishes where the ballot stations would have opened, the voting stations would have opened it at 9, not at 6. There would have been cases where the ballot boxes arrived. There would have been cases where there was no police person at the police station. So I am just saying, Chair, from where I sit, given the bigger picture, insofar as the logistics of the hearing, I've never been so impressed. I've been a legislator and lawmaker for 15 years or more. I've never seen such a successful then it, such a, I'm persuading, I'm not arrogant about it, because you must be careful not to be arrogant. Chair, the definition the organization AFRA is proposing on farm dwellers, I'll put it back to AFRA and invite comments and ask them to go back to think and have possibly still made submissions if there's room, Chair. That the definition of farm dwellers, once you take it to those people who were there before commercialization and colonialization, I think that's my own phrase, and whose parents were born there, then you take only, in my estimation, 5% of the farm dwellers. You then leave the rest to be vulnerable. It would be anybody, the devil may take the hindmost, I'm just quoting English. The devil may take the hindmost in terms of those, somebody who has been on the farm for 9 years. Would that person not be a farm dweller for all intents and purposes? According to the definition, if I got it correctly, AFRA, you are saying that's not a farm dweller. My grandfather and great-grandfather must have lived there. If the farm has been commercial for last 150 years, I must have been there, or my predecessors, my forebears, must have been there even 200 years before. So it will leave those who have been there on the farm for the past 10 years, for argument's sake.
very, very vulnerable. It will be for the devil to take the hindmost. Then, Chair, the total system failure, TSF. I just think that Mr. Farah is really a harsh judgment on what, if you noticed, I agreed with your context of the bureaucratic machinations that make us to believe in all is well. We've now heard the people. We've seen people cry. We've seen people clap thunderously for somebody making one point. And so the picture is very clear from where we sit. It's very, very clear, including at where you were at how we come. And people make very touching submissions. But we've not arrived at total system failure. Or, Chair, if you wish, to put it differently, let me point out the contradiction on what you say. On the one hand, you talk about total system failure. On the other hand, drawing on the wisdom of Honorable Bildan, that sentence, that paragraph starting with the years on the ground. The third sentence says, EFTA is an important step towards securing the tenor rights of farm dwellers. Let me repeat. I'm not omitting what it goes better to say, but the most profound for me is EFTA is an important step towards securing the tenor rights of farm dwellers. And it goes better. I don't think it goes better to contradict itself. It's something else to say that, Chair, and something else in the following paragraph to talk about the TSF. Now, you know, Mr. Farrell, that I was definitely going to pick up on this one to engage your organization. To please come and submit to Parliament one unified version. So you're standing on both sides now. I don't know if double dipping is the correct term. If it's wrong, I would apologize. You, on one side, you see this EFTA and the progress over the past 20 years as an important step towards securing internal rights of farm dwellers, with which I agree firmly, by the way. On the other hand, you see a total system failure. Now, I've not seen a total system failure, and I like how former President Thabo Mbeki is keeping us on our toes. But he has written a piece over the weekend where he is saying we're not at the breaking point. So I would challenge Mr. Farrell as he responds to please prove the total system failure. Because we might send a wrong message to the country that there is a total system failure. On that, as you would know again, as a representative of ASA, I'll vehemently differ. I can't see it on my bed. I have cases where the department via the land rights management facility, have won cases. You know, I've seen also from the Constitutional Court cases where they have lost cases. But would that be total system failure? This is not what I would suggest, the Chair, that OAFRA has judged the situation too harshly or emotionally. There is no total system failure. What we have is what they have written about, EFTA, as an important step towards securing the internal rights of a farm dweller. And my last point, Chair, these are public engagements and the public must hear all our contributions. I do not know, honestly, the issue of Malema in court, the Honorable, but he's not on his in court on his capacity, the Honorable. He's in court on his capacity as somebody who has conducted inflammatory speeches elsewhere. I do not know why, when we discuss EFTA, we should then include, I was trying to look in all our things. I think that my colleague before me really abused our ear, and I say it with respect. If he can really, he knows I'm very constructive. I don't think that this discussion warranted us to hear about Malema. Let Malema state his case in court and say that these hate speeches and these incitements, at least we're not calling for a check now. So clearly there is an impending call. Let him answer in court that he is correct in doing that. I think that the chosen path of a peaceful transition is the most correct one. I do know some of us who are prepared to go on insurrection, to take up arms, to do everything, to return back the land and to return back freedom to our people. But I do not think that to then talk of the Rainbow Nation, Jatuma Diva, Jatututu, and to build national social cohesion. It's a wrong concept. I don't think so at all. So I think that the Honorable Malema and those who have similar pronouncements must go and prove that they are not speaking against the Constitution. Because the point raised yesterday, I think the point that must be responded to. Otherwise, it will go and there will be a committee consensus. It is not. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members.
Madam Chair.
Can I just give Mr. Farage an opportunity to respond and thereafter I'm going to be for
us? Well, we will be in the context and the spirit in which
Can I request the other members, just let's focus on the presentation. Can we do that?
I think what I want to say that clearly, I'll start with giving a definition that farm dwellers have developed of family group, yeah, so that maybe it speaks to some of the points, the underlying points that have been made. And I want to thank all the members, honorable members, for their questions and insights. So the participants at that big workshop some time ago, they listed the following, would they consider to be part of the family? Grandmother, grandfather, mother, father, father's other wife, stepmother, stepfather, brother, sister, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, parents-in-law, daughters-in-law, husband, wife, husband's other wife, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, adopted children, niece, nephew, uncle, parents, siblings, cousins. So these were from 200 different farm dwellers. They were describing who they see as family. When it came to the definition, which the Honorable Mbuni has pointed out as being inadequate for the reality of today, it's the same thing that we as AFRA are saying. These are not our views. It's not us who have defined this is the definition that we like. This is the family that we define. And that is, comes to, Honorable Chair, your most pertinent question about how do you want us to do this public consultation? When? How is it possible? We're pointing out to the honorable members of the committee that these are not our views. These are the views of farm dwellers. How do the two freedoms meet? What is legal? There are some lawyers here. They will know many legal things. And what is meaningful to people. And we're saying that it's the parliament's job to intercede between the people so that we find the law and we find the right word. But it must be the people who speak and not the lawyers. So these, for all of these definitional questions, it is not AFRA that is saying adopt this. We are saying hear the voices of our people. And then let us craft what is most useful to them. And that's why, Chair, in our submission, and I think this also begins to speak to what we believe is the requirement of the Constitution, not a technical requirement. We can never consult all 2.8 million people. And we understand and recognize the process under your leadership which has taken place, which has been far better than any previous consultation. We acknowledge this, and we did start by acknowledging it. Our concern was we engaged actively with your office and this institution, also the institutions on the ground. We ourselves assisted and facilitated contact between farm dweller committees and communities in Newcastle. Yes, so we appreciate, we know that this is an attempt. I think what we're asking for is, we also did say that there are a number of hotspots, and what we're working from is the constitutional principle and not the legal technicality, that those who are directly affected, there must be a better way to engage with them. And that's why you can see what we are proposing is a national consultation of those directly affected. Because these definitions of family, these definitions of who is a labor tenant, these definitions of what rights people want, must not be mediated by voices in suits, even ours, however much, however we are on the side of the people, is an inadequate representation. They must speak for themselves because they can speak for themselves. Their vulnerability, that is part of the power that must be broken. The vulnerability that they are in, that's what we are challenging. And that's why we are saying here, there have been many consultations,
And what we are saying is that the greatest priority is for us to come to a common understanding of the obstacles and hindrances to the effective implementation of the law as it currently stands. We know from studies that 1 million people would move off farms illegally. This is now more or less well established and uncontrovertible. Some of that moving of people was proactive, to move our people off the lands where they have no claim to it at all, to make them essentially surplus and pushed to the side of roads. This was a massive process which went on from 1998 after our progressive laws were coming into place. It wasn't a single event, it was a process that was systematic and it was organized. So that the people who remain behind now are clinging for dear life. We understand the view proposed by the CGE chair, that there must be use of commonage, there must be many other things, but there must also be the protection of those who remain on these commercial farms, despite all the attempts to remove them and reduce them to simple laborers who live in RDP houses. And we say farm dwellers are not that. Farm dwellers are not that. They are people with connection to that land, and we must ensure that they are protected. Which speaks to this issue of pie and the comparative analysis. We would agree with the Honorable Member. There is much work that has been done by academics and by research organizations looking at the comparative impact of different laws. Some of them apply in urban spaces, some of them apply in rural spaces. I think that that's an interesting exercise, and again we come back and say, but we are not academics. For the purposes of people living and working on farms, can they speak for themselves? Can they be heard? This is what our appeal is again and again. And I think when we say, we are not suggesting, and I know that the Honorable Mbuni knows that we would not suggest total systems failure as a conceptual paradigm or framework to analyze things. And if there are contradictions in our views, there are contradictions lodged in reality. So we believe that this is a progressive step. But we also note that not enough has been done in many respects in terms of the law. So we are saying that beyond the technical exercise, the moment is now for this committee to lead and to intercede between the stakeholders in a time-bound manner to say, let us understand what has gone wrong, what has hindered, what are the obstacles, where have the failures occurred, so that this is not an apportionment of blame for political purposes, but for the realization of our people's rights, which we believe is the intention of the law. The question of how the technicalities are resolved must lie with those who are affected, and I think that's the constitutional principle of consultation. If the people who are affected speak for themselves and they speak with you, to you, and with the other duty bearers involved, then the legislation can be redrafted and redrawn so that it reflects their interests first and foremost. It is commonly held by farm dwellers and people on farms, that ESTA is really a manual. It is an instruction manual as to how to get rid of people on your farm. It is read in a way, and we're saying there are recalcitrant and untransformed power blocks in our country, particularly in land ownership, who do not want to see transformation, who want to perpetuate the myth that there was empty land to whom all of us came at the same time somehow. These are not only ideological interventions, they're not only philosophical attempts to distract us from the reality, yes? They have practical effects. So if our laws are being used as handbooks for exclusion, for legalized, how do we put this, dispossession now, then there are problems. And I think I don't want to refer to the Honorable Topic in respect of his previous life, but we need to really look at the institutional challenges from the land claim court and at the level of the department and at the level of district officers and at the level of the institutions that we are proposing. But right now, there is some urgency. When we stood there in between 1998 and 2001 and 1 million people were being moved off our farms, we were helpless to stop it. We were helpless to stop it as NGOs and even as the department. And we were being asked, give us evidence. And we could not stop to help our people when they were being evicted to go and write academic papers. So
I apologize to honorable members who want academic statistics, but we assure you that the reality is as you have seen it and heard it from our people. We are simply asking for another layer, another bite of the cherry, another important step in strengthening our democracy for rural voices which are not heard, especially those of women and children, by the way. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair, for the second bite. So, you're hitting Ron Napier, and rightly so, about those farm dwellers who continue to be evicted, uprooted from their homesteads. There's another generation of people who are being dispossessed right under the watch of the current government. And this is why I firmly believe that it's an exercise in futility to pass this piece of legislation. It's either we want to deal with the land issue effectively, or we don't, as the current government. No point in beating about the bush. You are so right when you say ESA is no more than just a minor, just a mechanism. Doesn't help anybody. It reaffirms the farmer's position that this is our land and nobody else's. Because there is a standing principle of law which says that if you have been uninterruptedly occupying land which does not belong to you as a form of ownership, you are effectively an owner if you have been there for 30 years and more. And what the farmers are doing is to make sure that that never takes place. It's already the presence of the commissioner. We want to say peculiar attention needs to be given to trying to effect in the new opportunity that we have of opening up land claims, to say farm dwellers who were there should have that opportunity. Some legal mechanism needs to be found to enable them to be given specific attention by the department so that they can access that. I know it's a hell of a lot of work to do, but if we don't, we are ignoring people who have suffered, because when these people are done, reaching age 60, they walk away, forced death, walked away from the farms, empty-handed. And when they reach age of 18, they've got to pay rent. That's a form of revocation of tenure. I know it's a lot of work, Chair, but I think what these proposed amendments are doing for us as a country at best is to remind us that we have got a duty as legislators to either leave the situation as it is and go to the grave knowing that we have an opportunity, but to scatter around the problem, or to tackle it head on and face the consequences. That's my pitch.
The presenter says that what they have quoted here is total system failure. Does not express their position. The quoted statement from a different source. Well and good, but if they do not believe in that, they should not have made reference to it. You must, honorable member, or sir, you must have the courage of your own conviction. You must walk the talk and state your views without any fear of contradiction. Please don't chicken out, because this is exactly what you are saying, which will bring concern in the portfolio committee and parliament and government as a whole, not to mediate and water down the deeper humiliation, the aspirations that people have on the farms. And that should not be mediated or should be sugar-coated. It must be put as is. Look at Honorable Chair, and I wanted to make this point in the presence of Honorable. Look, we must have the courage of our own conviction. And what he says as part of his last comment is a classical indication of what is called class neutrality. It illustrates what is called classical psychogenic illusion. And you know why it's a psychogenic illusion? Is because, and this is also what Fanon talks about, is because the post-colonial leadership and the intellectuals, they want to be on both sides and to remain in good terms on both sides of the dispute. And the last question is an important matter. And the view that he expressed here must be known, and the public should take note of that. That the ruling party in his attempt to be on both sides of the conflict, they are assuming a position of class neutrality and do not want to stick out their neck and speak on behalf of the constituents. Historically, the former liberation movement has been known for. It should also be on record today that the former liberation movement, with this position expressed by Honorable Nkulu, is a classical attempt of running with the hare and hunting with the dogs. The long and short of it is that they are running with the hare and hunting with the dogs. The issue of the land division and the issue of incoherence and inconsistencies on a range of legislation designed to transform land tenure or tenure system on the farms, it would not be addressed entirely, and I want to agree with Honorable Filter. This would be an exercise in futility. You know the relevance of the prevention of illegal eviction from an unlawful occupation of land is precisely that. Trying to be on good terms, be seen to be everything to all, and to assume a position of neutrality in a conflict situation, hunting with the dogs and running with the hare. In a sense that, and this is what the ANC is doing, the truth must be told, and we're here to tell the truth and to speak truth to power. In a sense that if you read that act, it opens the front door and say everyone else in terms of Esther, you are protected, and this is the legal instrument that will mitigate against unlawful, arbitrary eviction and open the back door for those who, like those farmers who continue to subject black farm workers and farm bearers to this unbearable condition, to go scot-free through the back door. And who has opened the back door? Is the ruling party. By having this legislation in place, whether its device or its dimension applies on both rural and urban situations, well and good. But that act, so as long as it's in place, so as long as it's in force, it gives farm owners the right to evict as and when they so chooses, and our people will forever be evicted from farms, and any attempt of our people to stay there forcefully, farm owners, just like the Burema Afrifora, will use that legislation, will abuse the legislation, will abuse the goodwill of the government to continue to do and to commit atrocities that they continue to commit against our people in the farms. And that's the point we're making, Honorable Nkulu. We're not in any game scoring exercise here. all that we're calling on you, and we're calling both at least on your conscience, and if your conscience fails you, at least we're calling on your consciousness. You can't be failed by both. That's the only submission I'm making. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Matilda. Honorable Matilda.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to come in earlier and raise in relation to all the presenters. Was referring to about the total failure, total system failure, and the need for a kind of an assessment before to proceed with this amendment. I wanted to ask, and I wanted to assume, so that you are familiar with the return impact assessment that has actually given rise to this amendment, that really point out to all the gaps in the current legislation and the need for it to be tightened. And the purpose of our public hearings is exactly to hear firsthand from those directly affected their experiences, whether you are making further amendments or tightening things further, so that what they have been exposed to date will not be repeated. You know, the if we are arguing to say that we must scrap the amendment completely, even the bill passed in 1997, then we are actually saying we want everything for all, as it was prior to this act. I am not quite sure whether my colleagues at the back are saying we need that. It is in the best interest of farm dwellers, people working and living on the land, to be completely at the mercy of farmers. I myself have been born on a farm, and I heard my colleague, I've always heard her speaking about an area where I come from, and my family come from, Steinsburg. That is where we are coming from. Certainly, my grandfather lived in England, so he was dying, but he said to me that I must go back and find the cattle that he left there. You know, so the point I'm making also is that the definition around the farm dweller that speaks to someone being born, whose ancestors have been born on the land, actually falls short. I know if you speak to someone who relates to the definition based on his own experiences, there's something wrong, and we will actually speak from that particular angle. But the reality is, people have moved. You know, some were not born on a farm, but have sourced a job there and lived there for 20, 30 years, worked there. You know, a definition should not exclude those people, you know. So I think that is basically the other point I wanted to make. But, Chair, I think the criticisms are welcome. It is meant clearly to point to us what are the clearly loopholes and where we need to tighten things further. So these engagements is very, very important. We want to certainly happy that Sotara is not holding back, that indeed is saying things how supposed to be said. Indeed his inputs are welcome, but I can't agree with my colleagues to say, even raised by my colleague right at the back, saying you want to be referee and player, hunting with the dogs, running on ahead. We have a responsibility as government to govern. We unfortunately have not reached the state of socialism or communism. We are still on a road there, but at present we are guided by a constitution that we have adopted. So it's important that as parliament we must create a legislation that in actual regulate those relations that are there. Our failure, say, in the shortcoming relates to systems that we put in place to monitor and deal with the disputes that arise out of this relationship. And I think this piece of legislation that we have in front of us is acknowledging that the ESTA Act as it is currently is not meeting its objectives, hence it needs to be tightened up. There may be in 5-10 years time a need to indeed review it again and bring forth new amendments to further tighten things up. But as long as people are evicted from France in the manner that's been done, then surely we cannot as Parliament stand idle by and not doing anything else or intervene to prevent that scenario from continuing.
So, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair President. I think the Honourable Matel has covered many of the things I wanted to raise. I'm supposed to say that all those who came here and all people who gave inputs on this are people who are concerned about the gaps that were left by the ESTA. And people will give their inputs in different ways. Ours is to listen, ask for points of clarity, and then take what we want to take from their inputs, and ensuring that whatever inputs, whatever we're going to put in this bill, whatever we're putting is not in conflict with the constitution and with the other laws of the country. My experience going on this oversight visit is that the situation is worse out there. The farm workers and farm dwellers are not actually treated like human beings, you know. The very people who talk about human rights and human rights abuse, you find that the same people actually discriminating against the most vulnerable of the South African citizens. So the people who preach human rights don't actually see workers as human beings. They don't see workers' rights as human rights. When it comes to people who work on the farms, in other provinces, like for instance in KwaZulu-Natal, some of the farmers use the labor laws as a vehicle to get rid of workers, to remove them from the land. You get somebody for coming in late at work, you give them a written warning, regardless of when did they knock off last night. Because then they are made to wake up in the morning because there's a water burst, a pipe burst. And then they work on that pipe burst until 3, 4 o'clock. And when you're supposed to go in and reverse a tractor in the morning at 7 and it's late, this person is given a written warning. And then the next thing it happens again, the third one, then you fired from the work, from your job, and the labor laws agrees to that. But I'm just saying that, you know, there are actually lots of laws that affect workers that need to be revisited in this country. Workers are human beings. They've got rights too. When we talk about human rights, human rights do not exclude workers' rights. Chairperson, there are instances where the haves in this country, the landed gentry, those who own land and lots of things, actually steal from people who add value to what they have. There are instances where farm owners literally steal from poor people. They'll steal their cattle, confiscate them. And the police don't see that as a crime. Why do you have cattle on somebody's land? That is the logic they use. Vise landesin, as Mayor Huke Musa Plus. No hukome jayo kue in Ireland. Neg verk for the bus. No, but I'm just saying, this is the narrative you get when you talk to people all over South Africa. And I think, and again I'll say, there are certain issues that Chairperson coming from the public hearings that needs to be referred to the police as criminal activities, as crimes actually committed against issues of theft and fraud. And the other is to the department, I think, you know, to the Department of Land and Rural Development. We lease land or we give land to people, to companies to operate, and those people treat people that they find on the land like they are no human beings. There was a case in, I don't remember which province was this, I think it's KZN, Anzu. Is it Ukumana? Yeah, Anzu. Where the government gave this company land to stay with people and work with them. But the first thing they do when they get there is to give those people the fund on the land off the land. And the department is quiet about that. These matters are reported to the lawyers. Our lawyers do not act. I've never heard of any case that was reported to the legal divisions of our department where somebody was charged for theft. I haven't heard of any of those cases. Either Musham winning it or even losing it. I've never heard of such a case appearing in the court where a farmer is charged for malicious damage to property, including it himself. There are instances where people are given your house. It's like a crop where you can't even move out. You can't even have a toilet, a big latrine in your yard because there is no space, let alone having chickens. And I hope you explain instances where a farmer literally and willingly so close water taps and actually cut them off to make sure that people are thirsted to death or they are denied water until they are forced to leave the land. There are lots of cases of constructive eviction, where a person is denied access to water, ablution system. You don't have right to move out of the farm. You can only go, your road leads only to the working field, not even to the farms next door. So people actually put in cages. They are like people who are in concentration camps. The difference between them and Jews who are put in concentration camps by the Nazis is that at least these ones are not put in gas chambers. They are allowed to die a slow death, as different from those who are killed instantly. How does these two differ? A bigger concentration camp or smaller concentration camps where we kill people slowly? And the very same people who do this are Christians, majority of them. In conclusion, Chairperson. And when these people pray, of which they pray twice, sometimes three times a day, and then in their prayers they'll say, give us this day our daily bread. And the farm workers are not part of the us who should be giving that daily bread. They actually make sure that they stop, that they are stopped for that, or they are stopped until they evacuate the farm. What kind of Christians are these?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, colleagues and our stakeholders. When Ben Farrell came there, he clarified himself to my satisfaction. And I really still appreciate to him. I'll leave him with a personal note to please pass my kind regards to his comrade and wife, comrade Margaret Johnson Barrett. They came a long way, over 30 years now, more or less. And thanks the clarity share that Mr. Barrett gave, I think, although no two individuals think alike, but I think that it satisfies my understanding. And some of the points he make, we tend to academize what is a social reality. Sociopolitical studies are not born out of academic analysis. Anything that would suggest that is flawed to the core. Sociopolitical studies in their nature are sociopolitical and economic struggles. But there is a link somewhere. I just like a theoretician or the revolutionary, but at the same time still a distinguished academic, a professor of at least seven disciplines, philosophy, astronomy, mathematics, economics, history, and all. And that's none other than the professor extraordinary, I think Matthias will agree, Karl Marx. And therefore, from Mr. Farrell's point, I think we should learn something. And also how he is cautious about the legal. He's cautious about the academic, he's cautious about the legal, and is not to dismiss those. But from where we sit as public representatives, I think we should be inspired from what he said. We should really be taking from the people's wounds and trying to represent that. It should then reverberate in the professional circles of academia, the legal, the what. But first and foremost, it is a social, political, and economic struggle. It is that. And I heard people talk about the commanders of sorts, some who never even carried guns, so never commanded any army, commanders in chief. My commander in chief was Oliver Tambo and Nelson Mandela, and my chiefs of staff were Joe Slovo and Chris Hani, and those are the commanders and chiefs of staff of outstanding history of South Africa can be rewritten. 200 years down the line, it would never live out Nelson Mandela, a Oliver Tambo, a Chris Hani, a Joe Slovo, and some of the outstanding fighters in the forms of Bomak Maharaj are still alive. They dared to get into the country disguised as the so-called garden boys and prepare for Operation Vula. Both Charles Mangula is still here in Parliament and others. So when we talk military warfare, indeed most of us get touched about that and knowing exactly our little contributions to make sure that if South Africa was not going to be free, it was going to be free through whatever means possible. I don't know if in a democracy like that. In a democracy, I persuade my colleagues, not by all means possible, colleagues and comrades. In a democracy, no, via the vote, via persuasion, via policy clarity, via submission, via the public buying in. And I think Mr. Farrell's plea must have really reached on very listening ears. To the extent that you are possible, you are able, Mr. Farrell, you may also not expect us to have and to do miracles. But what you experience day in and day out in the family, sometimes you just experience it. Even myself, I say in rural areas, but I never knew about the farm condition until I went to house during break, went to the mayor's home, found a home hung halfway through, and then they were interdicted, and he showed me the interdict. They may not even build with their own little money of grants and
labor starvation wages, they may not build on blocks, on farms, you know, and so many others. Chair, the next point for me to raise is about, I wanted us to be clear what we're saying to the public and to ourselves about EFTA being in one definition, being an eviction manual. I think again, Mr. Farez may have been emphasizing the point, but I'll really have to go to Peter Maspec to sit with him and really look carefully through it, not academically, but essentially, substantively. Because, Chair, the amendments I thought we are proposing are on family. He has captured my imagination. Go and report back to your organization. We buy that definition of family. We want a broad-based notion of family, and after all amend, it will be exactly that which you pronounce. So you can report to the people. Why? Because, Chair, people would be evicted. I'm farm dweller and labor tenant all around me until I'm left. 6-8 people would be repelled and rejected by the system. So unless the concept, the notion of family is clarified in the, so to speak, in the African sense of family, people brought by me, my relatives, the same blood that runs in me runs in them, or the same blood that runs in my wife runs in them, that's my family. These are the people that feel like who don't tell us whenever Mfundisi comes in, the family remains seated. Whenever, whatever the cause of death is said, the family remains seated. It's a big chunk, Chair. That's the family. So I think the notion that we learn from the submission by AFRA definitely matches our imagination, because if I'm this farm labor tenant or whatever, the system exploits the Eurocentric concept of family in order to evict all the people all around me. So we find some few graves of the family, other graves are out there. But I have two chairs after talking also about grants. And I do think that if anyone will be evicted after we pass the law, Chair, when there is a grant following that person, it will be much, much better than I have some picture of the mud structures, broken and leaking roofs of the mud and grass patch. If that person happens to be ultimately evicted and is followed by a grant, wow, what else can a progressive government do? Maybe my conscience and my consciousness are both failing me. I think, Chair, we were talking about Tom Sawyer. When we went to Cow House, we were shown graves over which then the farmer has since plowed. And it tends to be fertile. You know about the decomposition and the gases and all that. Now, it tends to be fertile. These tombstones would make sure that it never happens again. But also for family history and everything. I thought, Chair, we're talking about the maintenance, just took some few. The maintenance of dwellings where our people are staying. I don't think that it becomes an eviction manual. When we talk about a mandatory mediation, also I have a photograph of in Africa of an eviction order. And these people were saying to our chair, they caught me aside and said, here, and then I took a picture. This eviction, people just saw it being brought to them. But now, if we say compulsory mediation, remember mediation, you're not just going to be told that we are evicting you. Mediation means equal negotiations. That's how I understood the English word and the industrial concept of mediation. So it means there will no longer penalties. There will now be penalties for those who will do unlawful evictions and so on. That's what we are seeking to do. It's to the best of my conscience and consciousness, Chair. These are two separate things. All right, yes, right. The best of my conscience and my conscience, at least they are at one on this. On this mine, not yours. Remember, yours is destroyed by other factors. But mine, to the best of them, both my conscience and my consciousness, with the dispensation Chair that we seek to put in place, wow, the lot of our people would be so improved on. Chair, eviction, do away with eviction, because there will be undertones that to say, for as long as you have eviction, for as long as capitalism reigns, you are going to have retrenchment in the workplace. The consultant is still going to talk to us. Let me go and report me back to the structures then, if it's there. There are going to be retrenchment and eviction. Through the public fiscal sphere, I was taken to a Delta plant in PE, where Isuzu is built. And some of the OEMs supplying to Isuzu, workers came, organized under all federations, came and said, we accept a certain level of no rise, no pay rise, and a certain kind of regulation, because we know the books of this company, and I say it was in PE, I went there through the public fiscal. And then they were saying, we know that our company is going down, and therefore we see the need for some kind of... So I'm just saying, Chair, this running with the hands and hunting with the dogs does not take into reality, the notion itself, good English, but it does not take into reality the balance of forces at the production level, you know. So in a certain farm, the newspapers in KZN, I traveled to KZN this weekend and yesterday, talk to farmers crying out through drought. So if such phenomenon happened, would you still say no eviction, no nothing? So from where I sit, maybe I'm liberal enough. As long as there are tools to manage, as long as there are tools to manage the negative impact of this. And say, for the sake of clarity, one would never promote eviction. From where I sit with both my consciousness and conscience, eviction is evil. It smacks of the old order. But upon certain books showing a farm running down, it reduced from 300 cattle, now it's at 60 cattle, and then the farm... So, you know, upon certain circumstances, it may as well be that it becomes reality, because that farm is not profitable anymore. In fact, that farm is going down. That's what newspapers, at least in KZN, are saying by yesterday and over the weekend. I have them. I have carried them with me. So, as there is strife and drought, Chair, then some of these realities kick in. But Esther, in the manner we seek to amend, must just make sure that our people are not victimized, and there's no subtle, I said to Power FM this morning, there's no subtle racist attitude and agenda towards what's happening, the experiences of the farm people there. Chair, insofar as the department, and we're being hit very hard, they can really also now hear debates in the committee. We are told in front of them that we are running with the head and hunting with the dog. So, but Chair, we need to remind all of us and the public out there, last week the department introduced, Bujef and Bujoma, a new facility for protecting the people. Chair allowed us ample opportunity, I think about 2 hours, where we talked to the new facility. We told them that they must break the ground, they must go to constitutional court, they must be like the Dala Omar, the Kada Asma, they must be like the Trust Resort, they must take the opportunity to make sure that our people are defended. I do not know running with the head and hunting with the dog there, because clearly, we to our satisfaction, we told them, we showed them in sport language, yellow cards, right from onset, some other next. We showed them yellow cards. That's our people out there are suffering, and we cannot stomach it, you know. So, insofar as the thing about, Chair, I like my old colleague, Udadu Wilkham, but sometimes as we talk, we also interact with the public. So, he says this is an exercise in futility. And he saw Okutana participated in all the hearings, was there. Why would you waste so much energy in an exercise in futility? Again, I see some Jaburu talk. You know? You indicate left, you turn right. Because he participated so nicely, made contributions, even here he's making contributions. Why would you make a contribution to an exercise in futility? I bet share with my conscience and with my consciousness, I would never participate in an exercise that's futile. But he says that exercise in futility, and the public is watching and listening to an exercise in futility. Really? I think this is a very, very profound exercise. from all, I cited some of the provisions in the proposed motion. The provisions are clearly indicating.
Thank you. Participated in order to get information. In spite of that information that I cite, this ultimately is an exercise of futility.
Which role is that on the rule 56? Honorable Mboni, can you continue?
Yes, sir, to just conclude. Sir, what the best that the parliament can do is to try its best to help its electorate. And let the electorate be the judges.
Point on point.
Honorable
Mboni,
Honorable
Mboni.
And this presentation toward the end makes observations and it brings back the resolution of what is the National Land Tenure Summit 2001. And all of this should serve as pointers of what should have happened between then and now. And amongst the resolution of that summit is that there should be a moratorium on eviction. And despite the declaration of that, yes, still a point of order. That despite that there's been that resolution on moratorium and on a range of other issues, evictions are unabating. And I wanted to say, Honorable Fildan is right to say, if the amendment of the ESTA bill are not going to bring to an end its continuing eviction, this will be exercised in futility.
Can we pass those so that I think we'll raise them in our debates and whatever, but for now, or in our committee meeting, but for now, let's focus on the presentation. Madam Mboni, can you continue?
Chair, I just want to persuade my colleagues and help you as well, Chair. When they listen, some of us would never raise a point of order. They say all sorts of awkward, far-fetched and imaginary things. And we always listen and give space and chance. I just want to persuade colleagues, in fact, to insist to them that we all have the right to speak, and in that right to speak, in as much as we listen to anything and everything, they should really be human enough to also accept that some of us also have the right to make points, even if they are different from their own. In fact, that is why I differed when one of my colleagues thought that in the committee we are not political parties, we are one committee. But once one member walks in overall, even without pronouncing, he pronounces a political party. And those of us will then remain so honest and one party will be running away with their head. But having made the point, which I thought were talking to the engagement, I do think that with the amendment, and it is my good summary, with the amendment as proposed, and with the new facility appointed there, which is the land rights management facility, the one we were insinuating is related to Mr. Manenz or Dr. Manenz. That facility of my manager and associate now running that, and the instructions that the committee gave to them in front of the DG, who said we brought them here so that they can get the pulse of the committee. I do think that and convinced that a lot of our people, the whole 2.8 of them on the farm, would really be improved. I do think that we still remain open to further persuasion. I can't wait to hear the rest of other submissions better below, so that we tighten, like we said, extension of security of tenure. That's a clear intention. I don't know if we're indicating left and going right. That's a clear intention. We want to extend the security of tenure. And to thank again Mr. Farage for the presentation and to ask him to thank his organization for the submission. We'll try our level best, but we are also human. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, can I just take this opportunity and give Farage? Do you want to comment on some of the issues raised here, but there are not many? Can you please just mind time so that we allow the other organization to present?
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I think, just in brief, to quote from our actual written submission, where we speak specifically to sections 10 and 11, we state the following. The intention is thus to give farm workers slash dwellers, the intention is thus that farm workers and dwellers are given the opportunity with the help of the state to defend their rights in land. Essentially, these amendments make it more difficult for landowners to legally evict occupiers. Mediation and arbitration should be used first. Then it speaks to very specific things, but I want us to understand from our perspective, come back to this, to say, if we take the grant, for example, that is being proposed, we know that it should be questioned how this will be different from the provisions that exist at the present, and how it's going to rectify the situation. It is of importance to know that up till now, ESTA gave the minister the power to allocate funds to enable farm dwellers to secure their tenure, including by upgrading their rights to ownership, either of a portion of the farm or for the acquisition of land and housing or farm. These provisions of Section 4 of ESTA have barely been used. ESTA has been unsuccessful in achieving this goal of providing housing and financial assistance. It is not clear how the grant is going to be calculated, how the state can provide farm dwellers with free basic services like other citizens if the farm owner is unwilling to provide these. So I think all the issues that have been raised, Chairperson, honorable members, I don't envy you, but somehow it's for you to find a solution to these points, because they are not one, it is not, I think, a question of metaphors in English. It is a question of how do we manage these realities. The honorable members, the reason we have included and many other progressive NGOs will bring those same resolutions to you today and many more from 2001 to remind this house that we have been here before. And not to be emotive, but honorable members, our people have run out of patience. So when we say we do not want you to engage in an exercise in futility, the content of what we're saying, yeah, we think is helpful, however you blend this process, but we come back, it cannot be the voice of NGOs, it cannot be the voice of lawyers, it must be the voice of farm dwellers. We are pleading with you to create a step in this process where there is a national multi-stakeholder time-bound consultative process led by and really that has those farm dwellers and farm workers at its center, so that what these amendments come through that national consultation, which goes beyond the process of simple public hearings and consultation, but is an actual engagement on the substance and then the formulation of these amendments. I thank you, Chair. I thank the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Can you prepare ourselves for the next presentation by COSATU? Thank you.
Chairperson members. Thanks very much for giving COSATU a chance to just share our suggestions and our views around the secret bill. My name is Matthew, my surname is Parks, I'm from the Congress of South African Trade Unions. And I think, Chair, maybe to say it short and sweet, for us this is a very important progressive bill. With all its pluses and minuses, I think this law will have to strengthen an existing law which is very important to farm workers across the country. But of course, I think, Chair, we also do agree with members across the board when there is solution to farm workers, like a security is providing land equity and ownership to farm workers. But in the meantime, Chair, the trade union must do address in the current legal law, and this one is a progressive law. Chair, I'll try to be short and sweet, because I'm running against lunchtime, and lunchtime would be very cruel to presenters. But Chair, look, to us, this bill is a welcome needed intervention. I think members have already highlighted the increasing levels of evictions of farm workers across the country. We believe this will be a useful tool to empower our government and to empower farm workers to protect themselves. Having said that, Chair, look, also for us as COSATU, when farm workers evict or lose their jobs, they don't just lose their jobs, they lose their houses, and their families go with them. So it's a very delicate issue. And we know it has been a bloodbath of farm evictions since 1994 across the country. And this has huge effects upon farm workers. But we view this law as a step in the right direction. Chair, I think it is that we support in this bill is the substitution of the provision of subsidies or tenure grants by the department of the aspects to further regulate the rights of occupiers. And I think, Chair, also very importantly, providing legal representation for occupiers. So for us, as a progressive intervention by the department, we welcome them. Chair, I think we also welcome the attempt to further regulate evictions of occupiers by enforcing alternative resolution mechanisms and also providing for the establishment of a land rights management board. Chair, also we further welcome the establishment of the land rights management committees that we're hoping these will have to identify, monitor and proactively settle land rights disputes before they get out of hand. Chair, we are hopeful that this bill will assist us in providing alternative accommodation to farm workers and dwellers when they are evicted. And also farm workers and dwellers will be able to erect and to access the graves and the tombstones for the loved ones and farms, even those where they no longer reside on those farms. For us, it might, for members of the public, might seem like a very small technical issue, but it has a huge impact upon many farm workers who have left those farms for whatever reason and cannot access the graves of their long lost relatives. And of course, hope to be able to have decent clean roads, etc. Chair, I think also in terms of the issue of the maintenance of farm workers' houses, we appreciate the bill trying to cover both sides. One is to compel the farm owner to maintain their farm workers' houses in a decent condition, but also to empower farm workers to make their own repairs if they need to or they want to as well. I think both of those are quite important provisions for us, Chair. I think, Chair, we're also appreciating that the dependents or the family of farm workers will be expanded in this bill. Again, as I think the debates previously already in this committee have highlighted, it's a very important issue. And again, we're hoping that land disputes and reform can be dealt with proactively in the management board and the committees as well. And of course, Chair, look, I think it doesn't need to be said, but maybe just to state the obvious, that farm workers don't have money. So providing legal representation, mediation, arbitration will go a long way to assist them. And of course, your average farm worker might only have an education of standard 2. And again, this is a badly needed intervention. So we support you quite strongly. Chair, we've basically got three areas of proposed amendments to this bill. I think I must also say that as COSATU, we participated with the department and NEDLAC in the negotiations around this bill in 2014. We really had quite extensive engagements where you go line by line, where by where it is, as other members also do. This was part of that engagement, my worthy colleague who is here. And we had some agreements around that in the process. Unfortunately, between NEDLAC and coming to Parliament, the department seemed to have forgotten those agreements, which to us is quite alarming. But we've engaged with the department and they have assured us that this was an accidental mistake and that they're not fact-checking, so we appreciated that. But I'll go into those three areas for proposal, which we think can further enrich the bill and assist farm workers and their relatives. I think the first one was around the Land Rights Management Board. We now agreement in that act, we had agreed to include an additional clause, which the board would be represented by the committees, 50% women and so on, but also specifically by occupiers, landowners, and organized labor. And I think for us it's important to have the occupiers and the organized labor in the board and the committees to bring the issues from the ground there, to help to identify issues, to help achieve consensus, and so on. We're hoping these boards and committees will be on the ground and help to identify all the conflicts before they explode, as we saw a few years ago to Dorans. Chair, that a bigger part of our proposed amendments was that around the issue of evictions. There was a very progressive bill in 2010 by the department, a land tenure bill, like the title right, which the department drafted but didn't proceed with. In our case, the NEDLAC, we had identified about 10 very progressive, helpful clauses around limiting evictions or providing further protections for farm workers and the fence when faced with the undesirable consequence of rarity of being evicted. I think the first one was around the opportunity for genuine consultation with those affected. The second was for adequate and reasonable notice for the affected persons before the eviction, so you don't just go and chuck the person out at 12 o'clock at night. You must come with a written notification beforehand with genuine reasons, not just because we had a fight that day. I think as Honorable Chabaleng mentioned. Also, information must be provided on the proposed evictions and where applicable for alternative purposes for land or accommodations to be used to be made available in reasonable time to the affected. Chair, when groups of people are involved, for the department officials to be present during the evictions. I think again it helps to protect the most vulnerable, most marginalized communities. And again, most farm workers don't speak English. They speak Afrikaans or African language. So they need all the assistance and they don't know what roles are. They don't never even get a semester role. So it's important for the departmental officials to be there. Also, Chair, for the persons who are doing the evictions, they must be properly identified. I think we've seen the problem of evictions both in rural and urban areas. Again, Chair, evictions shouldn't take place during bad weather or at night unless the affected persons agree. And again, Chair, we've seen many farm workers, the wives and kids, thrown out of the farm at midnight during a storm or on the weekend. Again, Chair, the provision for legal remedies and, where possible, for legal aid persons who are needing it when they're in court. Again, farm workers don't have access to resources. They can't afford lawyers. Chair, also two very important parts about eviction may not result in persons being rendered homeless or vulnerable to the violation of their human rights. And the court cannot make an eviction order in the absence of a probation report by the municipality on emergency housing. And for us, this is important, Chair, because again, we've seen farm workers, their wives, being thrown out and then they end up sleeping under the bridge. The municipality themselves are badly overstretched around housing provision. So again, we need to compel the municipality to play their full role. Chair, just coming towards the end, the other part we wanted to propose to be amended further, and I think it fits into the previous presenter and the honourable member's comments, the definition of family independence. We do appreciate that the department is kind of confined by legal definitions of dependence, how would it go to court and so on. But I think for us, Chair, we'd want to plead to the members, we have to recognize the reality of the average farm worker, African or coloured, in the definition of family. It's not simply a nuclear definition. It might be, for example, that I'm taking care of my nephews and my nieces. I might be taking care of my uncles and my aunts who are too old to take care of themselves, as opposed to the strict nuclear definition of a grandparent, a parent, a child. So I think, Chair, we can find each other. It is easy to define those things. I think, Chair, also, if we pursue too legalistic a route around family definitions and say only adopted child, I would be shocked that there's even more than 100 farm workers who have gone to court to adopt a child. But if the brother passes away, they'll definitely take care of that child. Mm. So again, Chair, I think the law needs to, the spirit needs to match the content of the law. So those are three proposals, basically, Chair, around labor and occupiers being represented in the board and the committees, around the 10 eviction limitation clauses from the 2010 bill, and of course around the expanded definition of family independence. But Chair, I think in conclusion, good for us, this is a very progressive bill, it's badly needed. It might seem very technical, but for a farm worker being kicked out of his farm and live for 30 years, let's try and make a difference between him being sleeping under the bridge or staying in his place. We give him the tools to have his house maintained in decent condition and to repair it himself. I think, Chair, I'll plead for the members to reinstate this clause that NADAC had agreed with the department in 2014. And I think that the Deputy Chair will strongly support this bill. I think lastly, Chair, and we appreciate the good work that the committee has done over the past year. We do plead to the committee to fast track this bill. I think for too long, many bills in Parliament take too long to pass. They take 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. The fact that this bill left in 2014 and today we're about to approach Christmas 2016, which means in reality this bill might only be passed by the NCP June next year. It takes too long on many bills, not just in this committee, in all committees. And the very last thing, Chair, if I can be an opportunist, and I apologize for being an opportunist, but I know the committee is so much far more than this. The department's got a very good progressive hotline around farm evictions, where farm workers can phone in. That hotline is meant to then link them up to a legal aid. The department spent good money hiring one of the best, most progressive law firms in the country. Unfortunately, Chair, that toll-free hotline has not been working for the past few months. We raised it ourselves with the ministry in October, we raised it with the department. It's still not working, and we're heading towards the end of November. I'm not a telephone technician, Chair, but I can't understand why it is so complicated to get a telephone hotline to work. More so, the department has put good money for a very good cause there. So, I'm being an opportunity to raising it today because it's not part of the bill. But I know your members can squeeze the department to intervene and stop this issue of the chairperson. I think that is basically a chair. No more contribution, it's just the way it is. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Park, for listening to the presentation. Now, remember, tomorrow we'll be meeting with the department. I think some of the issues we need to raise when the department is making its presentation. I think it's a very important issue that has been raised by Mr. Park of the hotline that was not functioning for some months. Can we talk to the presentation? Let me emphasize presentation. Honorable Phil Turner, Honorable Mateo, Honorable Madela, Honorable Mimi.
Thank you, Chair. Significantly, the presenter says that the bill is in the right direction. He could not have been so accurate. Indeed, it's only direction, no destination. Because this bill is not going to help the sufferers to reach any pleasant destination. And I say this against the information that he's provided. He opens with an appetizing game. Couple of points referring to the economic context, but nowhere else do you see him quoting any proposed amendments, to the 1997 Act, which would change the economic situation of the farmers. He leaves it hanging. Typical of a presentation that points in the right direction, no destination. Nowhere else do you see. Typically, COSATU is an employee organization, not business people. So he cannot speak contextually, when it comes to business. We can understand that. He will refrain to respond to that. That's the great limitation with so far as COSATU is concerned. Number two, how will the Land Rights Management Committee access the intended beneficiaries from COSATU's understanding, given the fact that time and time again, during the public hearings, we're told that farmers take the pleasure of just locking the gates, whether they lock farmers, workers inside or outside. How will the land, Rights Management Committee access that? Number three, definition of bad weather. If a farmer at the peak of drought, the rain falls heavily, would you say that is bad weather or good weather for eviction from the perspective of a farmer who needs rain desperately? Lastly, How will the bill create a better economic climate for farm dwellers and workers? Back to where we started. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mathis.
What would welcome your gesture of goodness to make available what we say to COSATU perspective for the NEDLAC report to the committee so that we can have the liberty to understand the origin of your about the bill. You seem to be very excited about the bill because you refer to the progress. Maybe we can get the benefit of your perspective in its entirety. That would help us greatly. Look at, Madam Chair, I would also like to know the source of information that COSATU based its findings. Because, one, in 2000, the Portfolio Committee on Land Affairs made an observation that it is nearly impossible to attach a figure to the total number of evictions taking place on the farm. Secondly, the South African Human Rights Commission in 2003 made a similar observation. And it says there are very few statistics available to assess the advancement and protection of human rights and violation thereof in farming communities. Maybe COSATU might give us some hints on the source of information for them to conclude that the bill is in its current form. Progressive. And it's progressive with the benefit of hindsight that the 2001 summit, which the previous presenter referred us to, and the resolutions arising from that summit, none of that of those have been implemented. So what is the source of excitement? What is the source of your joy? Therefore declaring the bill as progressive. If none of those terms of reference have been implemented, arising from the National Land Tenure Strategy. Look, if you, the answer to this question would be in the negative. The narrative you are painting, comrade, is not really amazing. It's indicative and in keeping with the paradigm within the former liberation movement. Sound and use revolutionary rhetoric for no good intention, simply to pull the proverbial wool over our eyes and to blind farm workers and farm dwellers from the realities that they face today. I hope your answers will be in the affirmative, so that we can mark a turning point in the lived experience of our farm workers and farm dwellers. And COSATU should be at the forefront and must march in the vanguard in the defense of the workers' rights, including the women's rights for farm girls and farm workers, including of their dependents, of course.
Thank you, Honorable Mathis.
Thank you very much, Chair. personally have an issue with what kind of gender for the section presentation. When you spoke, when the presentation is aimed at the it was and nothing more in that sense. And certainly, all the workers, especially your expansion on the division, definition of kindness, there has been a concern that we, the bullets, it is formulated currently and quite the progressive suggestions earlier. That suggestion does not include the area that you have highlighted. And I think we will further strengthen that definition and certainly would welcome it. And who knows if we have an additional 12 million children in the hospital. But there are also much more children who are designing with families or with people that are not related to them. This whole notion of the community is responsible to bring up a child. That Ubuntu notion we sometimes forget. I think the issue raised in relation to access to farms has been a matter that that indeed concerns ones. And one probably would want to find out whether Mr. Parks would be wishing that the Department of Rural Development and the Land Reform will have a cater, or not use the word cater, but a team that would have unaffected access to farms, legally speaking, like those labor inspectors. They indeed have access to farms, access to factories, etc. You cannot keep them out from that, you know. And I think the concern is here with regard to what would what kind of situation will prevail on the department where the department indeed can have access. The proposal is indeed to say wherever an eviction takes place, then there have to be officials from the department. So which means they must have, and that access should not be one that is dependent on the mood of the landlord or the farmer. It must be access that is indeed guaranteed the ones of I hope you agree with that, and I certainly would welcome that. I think the other issue that came to our attention on numerous occasions during this public hearings is the fact that, especially when there is a changeover, then the new owner will come and will inform those working on the farm that I'm no longer able to work here. That literally is the first step in this whole eviction process. I was hoping that you would have something that speaks to that particular concern that the eviction cannot automatically follow when someone has been either detached. I think that's what one of the women was trying to speak to earlier, issue of detention workers under conditions where the farm doesn't make it. It's not that profitable. For purposes of dismissal, when there is a transgression that have occurred, that it must not automatically follow that from a labor or worker should be losing his or her accommodation. Thank you very much. I assume I will be taking the chair.
You would watch. Thank you. I've been asked to chair. I'm more interested in contributing. But then it was my turn. I've been opted after Honorable Mandela. I do know that the chair is going to come in with me quickly while I'm still there, making some points. Colleagues and making the presentation on making behalf of COSATU. My own take is different when you feed back to COSATU so that it's clear. Just starting to make the point here, so that I've not started the chat. I did the disclaimer. But make the first point that from where I move in terms of background, COSATU has contributed immensely to building our economy hitherto. It has also demonstrated that through its own players. Remember the first RDP minister was Jay Naidu, and Jay Naidu came from nowhere else but COSATU, and Jay Naidu, if I'm correct, is in the business world, is still building the economy from that front. I've not heard anything if he's in business, but he's such a lousy business person with no acumen. The same COSATU went further to produce in the business world, because I'm supporting a departure point for me that COSATU is very crucial in making sure that it helps build our economy in the right direction. COSATU produced its own, if you like, now, businessmen now back into politics, the deputy president, Cyril Ramaphosa. He comes from the ranks of COSATU, where he was secretary and later ANC secretary general. And again, in business, I am aware that while he was in business, he did very, very well. So from where I sit, Chair, I really hate COSATU for having produced great skills and inputs into our economy. I've never seen COSATU narrowly as a mere institutional organization of employees that's not capable of understanding the macroeconomics or the bigger economic question. But at the same breath, our current Minister of Economic Development, Minister Ibrahim Patel, again come from within COSATU, the ranks of COSATU, in particular, come from within COSATU. I'm clear from where I'm making my points that COSATU has contributed immensely in defining the socio-economic and political dispensation in the country, and that therefore, as a committee, perhaps we so receive contributions from COSATU. In that spirit, COSATU is very, very crucial. I could even make a far-fetched statement that without COSATU's role, our economy would be way, way behind where it is at present. It's among the biggest economies in Africa, in particular, from where I sit, and clear without mincing my words that all the thanks goes to COSATU. Before I go to industrial relations, the labor relations act, and various other interventions that COSATU have made. Chair, my second point is to hail COSATU for supporting. I've noted two contributions of COSATU. There's one that is detailed, there's one that's like a bird's eye view. In terms of there is one area that is written, the page that's written, areas of support, continue to the next page, the third page. It's a three-pager in terms of the slide. There are clear areas of support where COSATU is talking to the act, the draft amendment. So I thought that COSATU was put on, they applied their mind. And Mr. Parks, please give the feedback back to your organization that we have noted that you do want to support the certain provisions as you put it there, you know. You put there in the three slides. And clearly, each part is talking exactly to the bill. You talk about the Land Rights Management Board, you talk about the further regulation of eviction and enforcing alternative resolution mechanism, you talk about
Land Rights Management Committees, you talk about legal representation for occupiers being affected. And you say you support all that. I just don't hope I heard any voice correctly that was saying you are not talking to the people. Because if I read your three slides, you are talking right to the people. And when I go to your further finer print in the other six pages, I found COSATU not to be talking about J9 to another great leader they produced, like I'm keen to, but talking exactly to the nuts and bolts of the sentences, Chair, on the page 3, on the final print, even underline the board shall be composed of men and women, and then COSATU is proposing that 50%. I think, Chair, when at the committee we sit, we should really debate and say why we should not support COSATU's call for a 50-50 gender representation on the Land Rights Management Committees and Land Rights Management Board at the higher level. I think COSATU brought in very, very fresh and refreshing and progressive thoughts. Most of the victims are women and children, and to want to put in a gender issue into the structuring of the intervention is to be precise and to be straight to the point, to be spot on. So COSATU is opening our eyes to a glaring omission, to a glaring omission department. And I'm not saying badly, but I'm saying to a glaring omission. We had foregone the issue about gender and COSATU is going to say. There are two issues on which I would like to engage COSATU, and I agree with the Kuzis, if I had him right, one out of three times. You see, there's a slide where you are engaging us with the parts in your organization, ambassadors. Evictions should not take place, I don't know the page. I'm laughing because I know the department knows how it would have been very hard if it was them. I don't know the page. The evictions not to take place in particular bad weather or at night. Now, you are then going further to say, unless the affected person consent otherwise. I think there's a trap there. I think that concession that COSATU you want to make there might be having some problems. Or is problematic. If you had said you are proposing and supporting that eviction not to take place particularly in bad weather or at night, full stop. It's not an eviction if the person affected moves on his own, you know, or property. It's not a forceful eviction. So if that person wanted to consent, then he could or she could have moved on his own. It would be relocation. It would not be eviction. So, we want you to take it back to COSATU structures for discussions or to COSATU drafters to say that there were voices in the committee that pick up a problem with agreeing with affected persons. You know, with so much, so to speak, bullying, I don't want to say cocking, bullying in the circumstances in the farms, it's so easy. It's like what the police did under apartheid. They would come with what is called inland with even second facile everything. After one second facile everything now, CLTC was going to help me. Which is on the other side. Where somebody is deemed to have, only to find our lawyers were arguing through and through that person did it under duress. So you would have caught the reversing some of the statements that people were volunteering. Yes, I'm an MK operative. Yes, I've done it. It's only fine to have done under duress. So the same could apply with opening up there for duress, for people to agree to be evicted under bad weather and at night. So I think that in engaging with COSATU, I think that's the point that Oral is going to raise, if I'm correct. We should be very, very cautious about that concession unless the affected person's consent. Who should consent to Upumin Bulisina, the standard serving gospel singing in vernacular that? We Christians, we go out in whatever weather, but it's in another context. It's a commitment of the Christians to their calling. But here in the context of people being victimized, perhaps bad weather, I propose that Chair Kosatu goes there to look. I'm not saying we're in negotiation, but I'm saying it's a concession that then the next one, Chair, provision where possible of legal aid to person who are in need of it to seek redress from the court. I think that that point is right. It's just that the use of the term legal aid against the FCC on her personal capacity as a lawyer could help. The use of the term legal aid to me as layperson creates the impression that we mean that legal aid that was before Ngozi Chasa, that legal aid that was sought before. But now we've got a legal aid of our own. But Jeff, who has some little just called my legal aid? We're proposing to Kosovo make a contribution that the use of that legal aid might take some burden off your shoulder. And we don't want that burden off your shoulder. I thought it's 24 million. And when I went back to read the document, it's over 40 million that's dedicated to the work done by the facility and all that. So that legal aid in the context of the department, I'm merely engaging here, I'm not really as hard as on the consent. So I'm just saying, Chair, that legal aid, the department might sit back, Ubu Jeff, Yawn, and thinking that that legal aid that is being referred to is a legal aid in the normal course. But the legal aid that in the room we can only bet our last cent on is that legal aid. So maybe the phrasing there, Chair, but if the, I think the General Chapter had one about that. And on the rest, Chair, I'll rest my case by thanking COSATU, such a giant federation, unequaled by anything, untouched by anything, touched peripherally. I'll thank COSATU for making the provisions and for thinking that what we are doing is not reactionary. COSATU believes it's to a destination. And Chair, I may say this so that as we debate and the public discusses, remember COSATU is limited in what they have got to submit. Clearly, COSATU in its entirety of its resolutions, to understand them better, one would have to understand that they are fighting for a socialist South Africa. Their destination is a destination in a socialist South Africa. There shall be no eviction. So the destination is clear from where I sit because I'm familiar to COSATU policy. So the destination is clear to a socialist South Africa with no evictions. But from where COSATU speaks now, they speak in the pigeonhole of Esther. So they're not going to pronounce the broad what one. But for those of us who are interested about their role, I suppose let's go to their website and to their Congress resolution. And make COSATU continue to help Parliament and to help the oppressed workers out there for a better dispensation, which you have pronounced as socialism. Yes. I do know you will reinforce in future Congresses. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Mr. Fox, can you just provide those policies where you claim that we are aware that the committee is still going to sit and look at this presentation and seeing whether we agree on the presentation and amend the presentation that we need in front of it. Over to you, Mr. Fox.
Thanks very much, Chair, and thanks to the members for the questions. I think Honorable Rooney has captured my thoughts when you're saying our destination is socialism. And look, Chair, I think as all members from the different parties have said, the real solution is land equity, land reform, land distribution. But we know what happens tomorrow when a farmer is being evicted. And we can't go to him with dust capital and say, well, hold on. We have the reality of Esther Law. With all its pluses and minuses, it's better than what was there before. It gives tools for government to assist farm workers. It gives tools for farm workers to defend themselves. So as imperfect as it is, we think it's a progressive tool for all concerned. And it even benefits farmers to help regulate workplace conflict. Because we don't want to have a situation where conflict becomes violence. It doesn't help anybody. So Chair, it's not a perfect bill, but we think it's progressive and it's a step forward, and hence we support it. Chair, we think also particularly it benefits farm workers, occupiers and their families, including children. think Honorable Fitali and even Honorable Manella made important points around the issue of access to farms by the committees and the boards. And perhaps that's something that must be put there to give them that full access without them having to go to court to get a warrant, etc. We know farms are private property, but I think the point that Mandela raised about labour inspectors who have got the right to visit the workplace, the same power must be given to the boards and the committees and so on. And I think, Chair, we can't depend upon the Department of Labour inspectors because there are too few. You go to some places like Northern Cape, which is a third of the country's landmass, with many of the farms. The Department of Labour has got very few inspectors available. So I think that's a good point members have raised across the board. I think also the issue of definition of bad weather. Look, from our engagement with the department, it is left as a kind of broad term, because really I think it's meant to be any weather that the infectee doesn't like. Look, even the sun can be bad weather because if it's too hot, you can get sunburned if you're a child. You can get a heat stroke. If it's too much rain, pneumonia. So I think that's why it's left kind of broad, because it's only nice springtime weather which cannot be bad. I think we appreciate the way the department is coming from with a broad kind of inclusive term. But I think on the very point that Honorable Mguni has actually raised a good point that, so that when we had around the bad weather in our last percentage given was when the 2010 draft was developed. I think Honorable Mguni has got a good point. Rather than delete that unless consent given, because it's right, there's no equal relationship between a farm worker with a standard to education or his wife or his kids with the owner of the farm. There can never be an equal relationship. So that issue of consent should just be removed, and it should just be that there cannot be eviction during that month. And look, Chair, again, it might seem a pedestrian issue, but for someone being evicted during a rainstorm, that's quite an important issue because, not all of us, well, not all farm workers are having the resources that we have got ourselves. I think, Chair, look, in terms of Honorable Fitali's last point about the economic climate, no, sure, this is not going to resolve that. The real issue is about land reform, about resources by the two departments to emerging farmers to succeed. And I think, sadly, we've seen that many of the land restitution cases have tragically failed. And again, it's a challenge for government to learn from the mistakes and put more resources in effort. In terms of Honorable Matei, so if I get the surname correctly, my apologies if I get it wrong. Look, we're not popping the champagne about this bill, but we are happy about it because it's going to provide positive, real, and simple English benefits to farm workers in the past. So again, the issue of weather, that's going to help someone not to be evicted at night or during bad weather. The issue of alternative accommodation, forcing municipalities to wake up and to provide that alternative accommodation, forcing the courts to get a probation report, those kind of things can make a difference. Providing legal representation, again, is going to make a difference between a farm worker being evicted or being protected. The definition of family is going to help, again, those dependents. And even the access of graves, it's also an important bread and butter issue, Chairperson. So for us, Chair, look, as we start, we look at bills, not to call it theoretical slogans, but to call practical differences, which, if enforced on the ground, can make a difference. And of course, Chair, the challenge is to the departments then to enforce it on the ground. Chair, look, in terms of the eviction stats, I can gladly share some of the detailed research that's been done over the years, including some submissions which were given to this committee before the last elections by class from UWC, by Legal Resources Center, which gives high detailed stats on eviction. And I think they've even used stats in research over the years. Obviously, it won't be picture perfect. You know, when someone's being evicted, there's no one there to watch. But there are some useful indications of stats I can gladly share with the committee, which is useful reading. So a lot of Cossato has said this. It's useful stuff, Chair. Chair, look, again, I don't know, the issue of wool versus putting wool over eyes. Look, for us, Chair, you focus on workers' issues, and again, a workers' issue on this bill. It's a positive step forward. Chair, you know, Honorable Mguni, he raised the issue of Cossato products of Jane Idea and Cyril Robert Falsey. He forgot to mention Khalil Maflante, as well as Andrew Mandela and Honorable Chabileng. As well, those are also Cossato products. There's also an official youth in the department who's from Cossato, but I won't expose him. But we'll claim that legacy and does good work. Look, I think also in terms of the issue the Honorable Mguni raised about legal representation, maybe it's good not just to say legal aid, but legal representation and departmental assistance to have the two. take liberal interpretation of the court when you go to court, because you know all of the officials of the department may not be lawyers, and only a certain person can go to court. But I think to get all the angles there to assist these farm workers. I think the last issue is Chair is about I think Honourable Madeira raised a good issue about the change of ownership and retrenchment. Maybe that's something also the committee should look at subsequent evictions. We know there are existing laws for dealing with those issues, but it's always good to reinforce and to further tighten. And I think the issue of failure of farms, again, it points to the need for land equity. Because, yes, the farm might fail, but it's still land, it still can be brought back to life, so to speak. I think that's basically it, Chair. Yeah, and again, to say thanks to the members for giving us a chance to introduce our views, and hopefully it helps to further enrich this progressive bill, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Parks. Members and our guests, let's break for lunch. I think for 45-30 minutes. Then come back and proceed with our program. We will be getting the presentation by the Legal Resource Center. Let's go for lunch.